Welcome to Two Dope Boys and a Podcast. I'm Michael Brooks.
And I'm Phil McKenzie, since we're being dramatic.
I'm Michael Jamal Brooks. Two Dope Boys is a shout out from the margins. What the fuck just happened to my mic? Each week we break down trends using the lens of culture to shed light on what's significant to your future and why. We have super producer Matt Leck with us, and we have the one, the only, the host, the writer, the entertainment impresario, and yes, the empress of dating, Georgette.
Oh, I thought he was going to leave that one off. Pierre. I was excited. I was so excited. I loved everything else. I was like, he's going to leave off empress of dating, and then he didn't. Hi.
Wrong.
I have a new title.
Georgette Pierre.
Recapper extraordinaire.
Oh, yes. Entertainment Weekly. I recap. Power. So all my Power fans, if you love Power, catch my recaps and weekly right after the show airs on Stars.
It's good to have Miss Georgette back. And in contrast to Miss Georgette, we have to talk about the brand F-up. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So let's get to it, Phil.
Brand F-up this week comes from New York hotel industry that has created an attack ad that in our minds, and maybe the minds of any sane person, has gone a little far in insinuating, accusing, sort of putting it out there that Airbnb enables terrorists. So this ad was prepared by the Hotel Association of New York City and New York Hotel Workers Union, which basically asked the questions, are you at risk? And as the ad plays, they ask a lot of ominous questions, citing that Airbnb has quote unquote illegal places to stay on their website, and shows some of the aftermath from the recent Manchester terror attacks. And then they say that the suicide bomber, Salem Abedi, stayed in a short-term rental. So all in all, they're making great pains to link Airbnb to suspected terrorist activity. And in our minds, you know, this is going a little far.
It's kind of weird too, because it doesn't, I'll actually just take it strategic at first. I remember like how, we were like at the end of high school probably when September 11th happened. And there was a couple of years after September 11th where, and obviously at the time it was incredibly cynical and exploitative, but there was this like, everything was terrorism related, right? And even The Onion did this kind of really funny, kind of poignant thing. Actually, I remember after September 11th where, all these brands and companies kind of not knowing what to do, they would take out like, ads and say like, Ford Motor Company stands with America and blah, blah, blah. And what The Onion did was they rewrote it as if it was like the companies were so they did like General Mills clarifies its opposition to Al-Qaeda, and they did a write-up as if it was like the Pakistani government, like, finally maneuvering. So it was funny. But the thing that just struck me about this on that kind of mercenary level is that like in 2017 in New York and in the US, like obviously it's an issue, but it's a weird, like, it's not on top of people's minds. So it's a very weird kind of frame. And then, too, it's like, I think it's just it's such a failure of imagination, because there are some issues that are real with Airbnb.
Right.
Which if you wanted to exploit, you can exploit. Although the coalition there, I think are at cross purposes. I think like I have a lot of sympathy with the New York Hotel Workers Union trying to protect good paying jobs. New York hotels that still just basically like have grossly exorbitant prices and kind of just ride on sitting in New York real estate like every other rental property here. Less sympathy. So, but the more complicated stuff about, where do you want to stay and what experiences you provide and, Airbnb and discrimination, whatever, there's a lot of different tracks, which I guess could have been more complicated, but this just seems like such a bizarre reach. It's almost like a Saturday Night Live thing. I mean, there's an ad. We're not going to play it because there isn't a voiceover, but it's like, there was a terrorist attack in Manchester. Mm-hmm. It's like, guys, like, of the chain of responsibilities for a terrorist attack in Manchester, I have to say, despite, I guess I don't know what Airbnb's official position on ISIS is, but I would still put them pretty low on the list.
Well, it almost reminded me of what New York had to deal with when, or New York taxi cabs had to deal with when Uber, Lyft, Get came into the market. So They're really only honing in on Airbnb kind of taking over or trying to infiltrate the New York City market. Right. But listen, I'm not the number one fan of Airbnb. I have stayed in Airbnb when I was in Cuba, and I did one with one of my girlfriends because she wanted to for her birthday. But otherwise, I think to your point, Michael, there are real issues. I think right. You worrying about or insinuating that terrorism is one of them, I think is kind of, I think that was a reach. But I also think it was a waste of money and resources. I mean, if you're going to call out Airbnb, call them out for what everybody else has called them out about. And they've actually had to change their privacy and rules and regulations, you know, on their website for. But I think it's just them not, I think, yes, it's unfortunate to the New York hotel unions, but I think it's them having to adjust just like the taxi cab drivers had to adjust. They were paying $1 million for those medallions. I just don't see the difference in what Airbnb is doing in New York City that other businesses were doing. They just found different ways to come in and make money and make it affordable and different experiences for people.
Yeah. I mean, we could do a whole show right. on the ins and outs and relevance of Airbnb. And Airbnb has challenges. I think if you look at what the company represented versus what they are now, because now they are a hospitality company. Mm. And, you know, we talk about this. We've talked about it before on the air, but, you know, Douglas Rushkoff is another person that we referenced a lot on the show, and he's been on the show with us. You know, what does a company like Airbnb want to be? Do they want to be a community? Do they want to be a place where people can connect and have affordable places to stay? Because I use Airbnb, if I'm not staying with like family and friends, I use it almost exclusively when I travel, mm-hmm. unless I'm traveling with client stuff, you know? And I've actually made really long-lasting relationships yeah. with people in Sao Paulo, in Tel Aviv, in Amsterdam that I've stayed with. So I think there is some value to be had in establishing that kind of business. We're not going to litigate the good and bad of Airbnb right now. But, I mean, the New York Hotel Association is a completely unsympathetic player in all of this. They are blatant exploiters. There is not an affordable hotel to be found in New York that is anything even remotely decent.
That's right.
You know, there's not even the level that you would think about back in the day of like service is non-existent. Like they're just, here's a room, some air, and good luck. Yep. You know, so
yeah.
fuck them. Well, and, you know, so like,
do something to actually compete and don't try to like play some fucking hack Republican ad from 2004 to save your whack businesses.
Yeah, and that's exploit people's pain.
And exploit people's pain. That's the brand F up of the week. We got to get to what's up. All right, so for what's up, a senator from New Jersey, who I am not a fan of for numerous reasons, including wow. the fact that he's basically just pretty whack as a person. I'm attacking him personally. Cory Booker, no, I guess he's a nice guy, but his politics mostly are pretty terrible, is introducing a significant piece of legislation basically to federally legalize marijuana and strongly encourage the legalization of marijuana at local level. A lot of dynamics to this. Cory Booker obviously wants to run for president in 2020. And for the kind of some of the most core defining issues of our time and of interest to Democratic primary voters are going to be the, you know, core issues of inequality and reigning in Wall Street and areas that Cory Booker has, frankly, an awful record on and is really compromised by campaign contributions, but also of absolute essential and, you know, deep significance is serious criminal justice reform and ending and rolling back the drug war and all of its implications for race and class and incarceration in this country. So this is an incredibly smart move of him to do. It also tracks with, you know, marijuana is sort of like many other things at this very weird paradoxical moment in this country, because obviously we have this unbelievably regressive, authoritarian, racist, and dangerous administration, which also is trying to, you know, is completely reversed itself, reversed policy, and even the kind of minimal reforms of the drug war that the Obama administration put in place. Jeff Sessions wants to put as many people of color in jail as possible. They want to attack marijuana viciously and relentlessly. But at the same time, you know, weed's completely legal in Colorado. Massachusetts is just legalized it. They're working out the details, but it's going to be legal. It's been legal for some time in California. So weed is also moving kind of out of the counterculture. And you look at various studies. I mean, you know, I think certainly at least over, you know, 50% of the population has used it sometime or another. There's a lot of people that are regular users across, you know, every type of demographic spectrum. And now we're going to start seeing not only the kind of like big business move into marijuana on these state levels, but obviously the pharma industry and the kind of future of intoxication and recreational experiences, they're going to be interested in getting into the synthetic market and kind of mimicking getting high. And that actually poses a lot of challenges and opportunities as well. So, but I do think that having, you know, a senator that for all my critiques, I mean, first of all, he's a United States senator, which is one of 100 people, obviously, and he has big national profile. And this is obviously a shot across the bow for wanting to run for president. It's an interesting bet, and it shows us where we are in terms of marijuana as a culture. So I just want to open it up that way and get your thoughts from both of you, obviously, on, you know, any direction you want to take that in.
Well, I mean, as I was reading, I was actually trying to get a better understanding, because what they said that he was pushing in part of this legal this agenda that they know won't get through Congress or through Washington was descheduling marijuana. And what I, again, I never even knew what that meant. And so I was reading an article from Vox where they have five schedules and where they list out certain drugs, and marijuana is in the same schedule as heroin. And,
yeah, that's insane. Right.
You know, and so I think it's funny that they hone in on marijuana. And even with the states that have legalized it, they're still up against an administration that will threaten you,
right,
or prohibit certain things, even definitely, if you are within, like if you are compliant.
Well, and there's big, yeah, right. And as an example, like federal policy on banks implicates your ability to handle,
absolutely,
you know, your money and your finances, as an example.
Yeah, I think. Listen, I like the fact that he's pushing this. I'm just, you know, just to make it clear, there he wasn't the first one to actually talk about descheduling, but I know they said that Cory Booker was pushing it a little bit further in his agenda.
Yeah, this is a bigger thing than descheduling. This is actually federal legalization,
right? And even incentivizing
it with along states.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think. Well, I mean, the issue that and anyone can understand as far as people of color is that the laws are kind of stacked against us. We're the ones that are getting arrested and for even like petty criminal possession of marijuana, and the fact that it's even criminalized. I wish it was something that would be taken seriously, but I don't necessarily know how far he would be able to get with something like this, especially an administration that actually wants to do the complete opposite.
Oh yeah, it's not going to get passed at all anytime soon. But the fact that you go from, you know, 10 years ago, if Cory Booker was trying to run for president,
he wouldn't have been able to.
He would be talking about the opposite, if anything.
Right.
He would be emphasizing his quote unquote tough on crime bona fides if you were trying to position yourself. So the way the politics and the culture of it has changed, at least for a large section of the country, is very noticeable and has big implications for not only first and foremost, hopefully good policy, but also business, because this is going to become federal at some point, and then the whole production of it and the whole way it's regulated and the science of it is going to change as well.
Yeah, you know, I think there's really incredible branding opportunities here, because a really good friend of mine who worked for years in spirits,
right,
at various companies. So shout out, he knows who he is. I'm not gonna say his name.
Right.
Wow. You know, he's one of the first people that actually came to me years before, even before it was legal in some states. And he would always talk about how, you know, one day we're gonna be looking at the same branding and marketing I do sitting here working for, you know, high-end spirit brands is going to be the exact same marketing and branding that you're going to see for weed and all those kind of businesses. And I think we're definitely heading in that direction. There is obviously a need to have the legalized marijuana business be far more inclusive. Right now, that business, wherever it is legal, primarily places like Colorado and stuff like that, it is dominated by white people. There's not that many people of color or women that are represented in the field. That is changing, but it is not as universal as it should be, particularly when you juxtapose the long criminal justice history of and the criminalization of marijuana, and those communities and people that were most affected by it are now poised to be locked out of it as it becomes institutionalized and legal. So that is one big piece of it. But I think that other piece that speaks to the branding opportunities, the way in which it's going to be marketed, still a product that is, though used, has a overhang of from the past of what it is and what it means. But for those who are really forward thinking, I think it could be an incredible opportunity to prepare for that eventual decriminalization across the country. And then how are you going to differentiate yourself, one brand, one strain, one type, from another?
Yeah, and I actually think that, obviously, like anything else, and I think particularly with marijuana, like, you know, I want to see, and it depends how things are regulated and sort of set up in state level and at federal level when that happens. But, you know, I want to see the growth of, obviously, it being a really broad-based business in terms of who's represented in it in terms of ownership. And I also want it to be organic. I want to have the small business. I mean, the same concerns about how it's raised, the labor conditions, and the quality of the high.
That's fair.
Oh, those are the defining questions. Because absolutely. I actually think the other thing about marijuana, too, that's going to be interesting on a brand level for literally weed itself, is as it becomes this kind of legalized mainstream thing that has a lot of money and a lot of corporate interest, I think that actually there is going to be a contingent of people that would still like to think of it as still something a little bit illicit and still a little bit outside of, you know, the everyday and the expected. I mean, that's kind of part of the charisma of weed. So how you figure out how to kind of, and that's going to include
that's the branding.
And that's why actually issues of who owns it and how it's raised and how it's farmed and where it comes from is actually going to be a big deal to people who, you know, even people who aren't deeply invested in weed culture but have some appreciation of weed culture. I think that that's something they're going to be thinking about a lot, because it should be connected to, you know, a bigger set of concerns and a kind of bigger lifestyle choice.
I think I forgot what story it was when I was on here with you while we were talking about it, but I think the bigger thing is how are they going to be able to connect the dots if this becomes something that's on a mass level, right? Because things are always compromised when they become mass produced.
I think it's already been with weed, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And so, I mean, that's something that I think about. I'm not a weed smoker, but I definitely would consider being in that business just to learn more about it, and just because it's lucrative, if you can get into the barrier of entry, right?
And I think you said, like, I mean, when you highlight it, it's a culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like a culture. There is a culture to these things. And when you start to put in the corporate overlay, whether that's a huge corporation or these new operators that are coming in and growing their businesses, they're not really interested in the culture of it. You know, and the culture goes beyond the high. It goes into a lot of
That's how you do it exactly. That's what I want, you know, my like weed from like actual Rastas and like real fucking hippies in Humboldt County, because those are the ones. And again, I use myself as an example. Like, I smoke from time to time, but I'm not a regular user at all. But I still have an interest in the actual culture of it and a respect for it that some people actually do have. as, you know, separate from the kind of either just it's another pure indulgence or, you know, well, just kind of sloppy.
That's like the people who drink, like, you know, they go, they get a drink at a bar.
Exactly.
And then there are people who are connoisseurs. They build right. wine,
but you know, some sellers even and sometimes just get a drink in a bar still want to know
that
they're part of some. Exactly.
Yeah, they get the flight of wine exactly. or they're like I'm a whiskey right. and bourbon guy, so I'm into all that different stuff and the barrels and how it's made and all the rest of that. So there is, and these are the opportunities, these are the chances to kind of, if you're a brand, to differentiate yourself and lean into the culture rather than just make it like anything else.
And that's why all the companies, whether it be in Colorado or wherever else, like, they need to start putting their money into national pushes to support something like the Cory Booker bill, not only because it's the right thing to do and it's good for their business, because they also need to always remember that as a brand, like, you know, if they're just like, oh, okay, this is just for, you know, some people get high in Colorado, that's nothing. But if they say we're putting our money where our profits is, and that is to help, you know, legalize weed, so really actually fundamentally, whether you use our product or not, we're not contributing to a repressive and racist and, you know, really just millions of life destroying drug war. And that, you know, is also, it's like ultimately the core policy point. And that's what's up. We got to get to what's next.
Now we want to get to what's next. And this is a little bit of a continuation of a conversation we had last week, where HBO recently announced that they're going to be working on a new show from the creators of Game of Thrones called Confederate. And we discussed it last week, and the talk and the attacks on this show have not ceased. In fact, since we aired our episode, they have created a no Confederate hashtag, which actually was number one trend over last week's Game of Thrones. And people are really still very much up in arms around the idea that HBO would create a show about a alternative history, alternative timeline, where slavery is still happening. And many people, very many talented writers, Roxane Gay and others, have discussed that we don't want pain off of the off of black bodies. To juxtapose this, Amazon has announced that they've been working on an alternative history drama as well. This one comes from Will Packer, who is a well-known and very successful producer in Hollywood, and Aaron Magruder, who's the creator of The Boondocks, both the cable show and the comic strip. He's won Peabody Awards, very successful. They've created a show called Black America, which envisions a post-reparations America. So without going into too much detail about their show, it basically is an alternative history where black Americans have received certain states as reparations, and they've created a society and a country within a country, and how they deal with America, both as a sometimes adversary, sometimes ally, and that's the world that they've created. This obviously sounds a lot more interesting for a lot of reasons. And
yeah, you guys would say that. Wonder why.
Exactly. Two of us are completely on board with this reimagining.
I feel a little unsettled by it.
Why do you feel unsettled?
Matt's fucking sweating over here, literally.
Why so unsettled?
I just feel like you guys, like, everything's a race thing with you people.
Do not take Michael seriously. He's going to be right in there watching it on Amazon with us.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's right. What if they did get reparations like that?
Oh, my gosh. You're so
excuse me. My grandmother's on the phone. Hello, Grandma. How are you? All right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think actually from a creative process, that the point that you had made a couple weeks ago about, And I think that this could go, like, in many different directions. Like, the idea that using speculative fiction, which isn't really my thing, I have to say, to actually explore something that is different and distinct is gives a lot more. So like to me, it's like, you know, if I would say actually, if they said like, you know, the Game of Thrones guys were doing something that was set in the future where America became resegregated and reconstituted slavery, I would have a lot more sympathy for it, because I'd be like, that's an interesting, like if they have an angle to get there where they talk about current trends that exist now and somehow that was reconstituted, to me that would be terrifying and potentially interesting. And so this project is interesting just because it's that. You're doing a new canvas. And I think like actually in the, you know, it's a different moment historically and it's a completely different example. But, you know, like it is interesting that, you know, people went into Liberia and founded a state and there's like actually real tensions inside, like people who went back and people who were dwelling there before. It would be interesting to see like what are the new like hierarchies in that society? What are the foreign policy? What is the United States all of these potential scenarios are much more fruitful than, you know, what I'm sure what the Game of Thrones guys will do, which is that, yes, the South will be evil and really fucked up, but it will just be like an extension and an expansion of what we already know, not like actually contemplating something different. And this is an interesting thing to contemplate.
I think it is. It was funny. I mean, again, the whole controversy, because we were also talking about it on my podcast, Venting and Vino, about Confederate. Because I already take issues with Game of Thrones. I couldn't even get past season 4. But I thought it was very interesting that... the rape was becoming too excessive for me. It was just hard to kind of constantly see the rummaging of the much sexual violence on top of the mm-hmm. other violence. I just didn't like the time period. Yeah. But I think from my understanding, the fact that, you know, and I think even Will Packer said it in this article, the fact that from a personal level that a show or any type of creator wants to reimagine what modern day or contemporary slavery would look like now, especially not having been the one to be affected by it, the long-term effects of it. I can't even say hurtful. Like, I don't really have words to describe it. And so when reading the alternative from Will Packer and Magruder, I think it's going to be very interesting, because the same shit talking that was happening with HBO's Confederate, just imagine the people that are going to be so offended by Black Americans or people that, you know, in the show Black America, wanting reparations for the damage that was done to us. So
yeah, you had reparations. It's called Barack Obama. What the fuck is your problem? Jesus.
Whatever. I think it's interesting. Want? I think it's...
Here, take my shirt.
And it's actually important to note that...
My grandparents didn't own any slaves.
It's important to note that the Amazon show wasn't in response to HBO's Confederate, because I feel like people are going to try to spin it and twist it. No, yeah, they already had this in the works, but they didn't have a title for
anybody
it.
Anybody who thinks a production process works like that, but that would actually be amazing.
You have the trolls that are
just
ignorant.
Fucking text
that
just, the Amazon like, hey, HBO fucked up. You want to give me a massive budget to create a spec?
HBO had an opportunity when the No Confederate hashtag was trending. You know, this happened like in a few days, where the same women who created like Hollywood, Oscar So White, created No Confederate, and you know, Game of Thrones is like peak watching TV for so many people. So to have the No Confederate trending at the same time that show is on demonstrates just how much people don't want to see this show Confederate. And HBO released a statement again the next day, kind of saying, oh, we just want people to be patient with us, like trust the process. And I think that's just incredibly tone deaf from an organization that has so much of an ability to, you know, influence what's going on in the culture. And as much as they want to pretend that their show, that this potential show is about imagination and reimagining, I think it's actually just the opposite. It's doing what's easy. It's doing what's lazy. It's doing what people feel comfortable with to a certain degree, which again is that sort of pain and exploitation of Black bodies. you know. And when I think about a movie, and I posted this on Twitter, where there was critique of Dunkirk, you know, the latest Christopher Nolan movie that was released about a week ago, and the movie's doing very well. I'm kind of a military historian guy. I probably go see it. But again, it depicts a particular moment in history, but it leaves out so many other people that were actually involved with this successful evacuation that was one of the pivotal moments in World War II. And I think so much of these things become the gospel. And when, as much as we talk about how stories, how they include people, is also who they exclude that matters, you know, because these dramas, these shows, they do shape our perception of history, even when they're fictional, you know. And it's about how comfortable are people with this idea that, oh yeah, of course, like, Black people in America could have remained slaves and not had any sort of way to free themselves, even though this history is filled with slave revolts and people desperately trying to be free beyond any sort of institutional fighting of the Civil War. So those are the things that I think are really concerning, that there's a complete lack of imagination in Hollywood, on mainstream TV, to show things that are truly, truly inclusive and can imagine even not new realities, but realities that exist. So when I see a show like this, it gives me hope. This sounds at least a lot more interesting than Confederate, which I still maintain will not be made.
Well, I think HBO is going to go through with it, but I think what's to know, and y'all probably already discussed it, was just more so that they knew they were kind of teetering in very risky territory with the idea of Confederate. And so I think what's going to be, I think just knowing and seeing, and even having been trolled by trolls, I just think there's going to be similar regard to some slight outrage against the concept of Black America on Amazon as there was to HBO's Confederate. But I'm here for Black America on Amazon, and I look forward to definitely seeing that. I mean, especially since, like, you know, now that when you think about it, like how they were kind of, how Will Packer was talking about it in the article, he was just basically saying that there really, no one's actually, to your point of the lack of imagination, Phil, like, no one's really thought about that type of content in long form sense. Like, what would that look like for those that, for slaves that got reparations during that time, and they're hiring historians, and I mean, like, they're really doing their due diligence to make sure they're telling this accurately.
I just would like to add, just as a brief side note, that, you know, I don't think Amazon greenlighting this, I wouldn't describe it as a risk, but I think it's an interesting unconventional choice.
Although yeah,
it fits with Man in the High Castle in some respects.
I don't know what that's about. I've been hearing
that. As if Japan and Germany had won World War II. Which actually, in its own ways, watching it can be stressful in a different way, but it can be stressful. But I just want to say, I think, you know, obviously there are, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe through the grapevine, but I don't think there's any way that they necessarily could have anticipated that HBO was going to, you know, give a green light on this project. And the way things are working out now, that in addition to giving a, you know, talented creator the green light, creators do an interesting project, they're going to be, you know, reaping the benefits of a massive surge in positive PR relative to what's going on with HBO. So it's just, you know, it's a good call to make distinct and creative choices, and Amazon's benefiting from that right now. We still should probably be wary of Amazon, like, you know, eating up the entire planet. But I just need to note that.
Yes.
That's what's up. We got to get to the crates.
Now we got to get to the crates, and this is where we're going to bring you a piece of work that you'll find interesting, that's going to make you smarter, nimble, better. I'm dropping on the music side of things today.
You usually are, bro.
Yeah. So, well, I did a book last week, but I've been really pulling up a lot of older music for DJing and stuff like that. And the album that I want to highlight, it's Quincy Jones, The Dude. And there's one more, which is by LaBelle, Ladybirds. And they're both different records sonically, but there's a lot of good music out there. Obviously, with Lil Bell record, everyone knows Lady Marmalade. That's the biggest hit on the record. But actually, there's not a bad song. And I've really been digging into that 70s sort of funk. And they're I think a lot of female artists don't really get a lot of respect for the totality of their discography, and they might pull out singles here and there. But LaBelle is such a major group. It's beyond Patti LaBelle, Nona Hendrix is just a giant in the game. And I just feel that there's so much there. So I definitely want to recommend them. And again, Quincy Jones is, what else can you say about Quincy Jones? But the dude is just a great record. It's 1980 release. It's right when he's on the cusp of like working with Michael Jackson. So you hear a lot of the same cues that led to historic records you see from Quincy Jones. And he's someone who's obviously worked with everyone under the sun. Frank Sinatra, Count Basie. He's just amazing. So those are the two records.
Great guy. Georgette.
I went to Cuba a couple of weeks ago, which was an amazing, amazing trip. So I had to just kind of shout that out. But a couple of things. There was a book that I was reading that's by Edwin Gaines, and it's called The Four Laws of Prosperity. I knew about some of the things that she was talking about, but I just kind of had to feed my mind with some more things. And then my song, Going the Music Route. Anyone that knows me knows I'm a Ryan Leslie stan. Don't do that.
You really are.
I am. And everyone's just like, it's such a random name to say, but it's not random to me. And so he did a concert in New York at the Bowery a couple of weeks ago, and he released a new song, and it was called Waiting, or I'll Be Waiting. And oh man, that shit was on repeat.
I'll be waiting to listen to that.
Ooh. Watch it. It's on my Instagram, but it's available if you hit him up. So Four Laws of Prosperity by Edwin Gaines, and then my favorite song by Ryan Leslie right now is Waiting.
We kid, Ryan. Ryan Leslie is actually pretty dope. Like,
I feel like I should have him, because at least from the tech
aspect. No, he's got a lot of stuff going on Super beyond phone. Just his music, but I've seen him so many times at different things.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah, no, this man.
I mean, look, everyone says it. I think, frankly, he's a pussy. Oh, President Obama does not like him, Georgette. I'm sorry. Yeah, he's soft. Fuck him. I've been thinking a lot about, obviously the kind of larger crisis and challenge we're in, but also, tools that people can kind of help navigate it. And I've just been having so many conversations recently where I've been thinking about the value of having, although it's not always as consistent as I want it to be, but having a meditation practice. And there is a book written by one of my kind of core mindfulness meditation teachers named Joseph Goldstein, who is a just crystal clear, totally non-dogmatic. You can come to his instruction of Vipassana meditation. And as long as there's certainly it's integral to a kind of classical Buddhist understanding, but you can come in with any atheistic or any religion. It doesn't matter. Your sort of like possessor belief system. It's a practice. And he wrote a book in 1987. He has more recent stuff, but I always just appreciated this as a basic primer in the mindfulness practice and how it actually works. And it's called An Experience of Insight, A Simple and Direct Guide to Buddhist Meditation, written by Joseph Goldstein in 1987. As I said, I've had really the kind of incredible privilege of being able to study with him and spend time over the years. And he's just an incredibly down-to-earth guy and very smart. And, went to Columbia, then he went to Thailand and basically helped bring back Vipassana meditation in the 1970s. And that, he's definitely one of the kind of core reasons why we have it so much in our culture today. So that's my crates for this week. We'll be back at you soon with more Dope Boys. Thank you, everybody.
Peace.